Okay, hello, welcome. Welcome into the online Dharma Hall. It's really lovely to be here with you. I've just dashed from one room to another as one computer didn't seem to want to give me a camera or a microphone. So, a little unsettling to do that in the last moments, but... yeah, I hope wherever you are, however you are, you're feeling good to be coming in here. Maybe for some context for each other, maybe we can share a little bit where we are right now as a way of kind of settling in. If you feel happy to share that information, can just give us a sense of each other. I've just come back from Palestine, into Israel, into my partner's mother's apartment to do this session. And they're both out of the house at a ceasefire protest. So that's kind of the location I'm in at the moment. We can touch into a little bit more about Palestine and what's going on there. Maybe later on we'll have time for discussion, questions and things like that, which may be more interesting than the Dharma topic that I bring up. But they're actually related, as I hope will become evident. Feel free, pop in the chat if you wish, where you are, how it is, where you are, how you're feeling. Be happy to see those, and happy to have those voices, our shared expressions, starting to come into the session. So what I like about this part is it's like, oh yeah, we're not all exactly in the same spot, and that's a beautiful thing. So it's nice to get a sense of spreading around the globe a little bit more. Yeah, thanks for those sharing a little bit of context as well with their sharing. The second point with the chat that I quite enjoy to do, as many of you will have become familiar with, is if we imagine, I was actually saying this to the group of people I went into Palestine today, if we imagine that we could be contributing towards anything, you know, if we could be bringing something into being through our practice, through our ways of being present, through our what we pay attention to, how we pay attention, how we speak, how we act. You know, if we could bring something into being through all of that, what would it be? And yeah, as I said to them this morning, like, don't be reasonable, be unreasonable with your with your wish. You know, say what it is that you want, not what you think is possible, and then we'll try to head in that direction. Be a good reminder for us through that day that we had together out there. And it's going to be really useful for this session now, for the next hour and a half, however long it is you can stay with this. And also it's useful anytime, like any day where we don't declare an ambitious intention, you know, might be a day wasted. We could argue that. But it might be. It might be. Yeah. So, yeah, if you could put your energy, your effort, your ambition towards anything, what would it be? What do you wish to see in yourself, in your world, in your community? So yeah, again, you can pop those in the chat, into the chat, and we'll see them come through there. So I'll name a few and we can consider them. Consider them willing to manifest, maybe in that moment of them being named, being read. Wide trust. A limitless heart. Peace, love, and understanding. Gratitude and appreciation. Loving kindness, courage, compassion, peace and joy for all beings to be safe. Unconditioned kindness between all beings. Decision making. Gentleness of heart. So if any of those spoke through you or spoke to you, let's stay with them. Let's bring them together into a meditation space, have them as our aspiration, inspiration, direction. And we'll have half an hour of some practice together, and I'll drop in a few suggestions through that, hopefully in a way that'll be helpful and supportive of these wise intentions. And the others that haven't maybe been named or didn't find words. But also to direct us a little bit into the territory that I want to speak about today. So feel free to find a posture that's helpful for this kind of direction. Feel free to have your video on or off, whatever feels comfortable. As we settle in and begin our practice, take a bit of time to feel with something like the breath, playing, adjusting, opening, different ways of breathing be a helpful way to head towards this intention. Word, listening to the sounds around. With a more structured practice, if you know them, of the Brahmaviharas, like metta, kindness practice, compassion practice, be the direction. Maybe we just have three breaths here to get a sense of the state of the heart, mind, body. How's the breathing? Often be helpful just to notice. And what I mean by just notice is don't make a big judgment about it. It's not right or wrong. But is the energy quite high? You know, the mind quite busy, agitated, a bit buzzy in the system, a bit wired? Or are we a bit flat, a bit low energy, kind of maybe overly calm, almost dull. And we could just say, oh, okay, it's like this right now. But we could also think, I'm going to counter that. If you're feeling a bit flat, a bit dull, what about a sense of that breath coming in and up? And maybe also when it goes out, it goes up. Out of the top of the head, out of the top of the shoulders, lifting us. Or the body becomes light. Literally light or lighter. And if we're a bit wired and hectic inside, what about that out-breath energy? It's coming out of the legs or the feet, kind of grounding. You can use the imagination to feel we're actually in the ground, up to our waist. Body is a little bit under the ground. The out breath, relaxing the face, resting back. Through the meditation, just noticing how the energy shifts, fluxes, flows. It's dynamic, and we can be dynamic in our practice at times. So noticing now, what about the energy now? Is it well balanced, kind of vibrant tranquility? Or if not, is there any adjustments? Maybe breathing longer or shorter? Really just try anything. Experiment. Maybe try harder, more intensely attending, or maybe a lot less. Just changing something, trying something. Remembering your intention, what you're aiming towards. What would bring that in? Just whatever you imagine, whatever you intuit. Take a moment to enjoy this breath, this contact, this moment, however it is. If there's been any thinking in the last few minutes, what's the nature of that thinking? Is it pushing away, trying to fix something, make it disappear from us? Is it kind of a pulling towards, trying to achieve something, be something, get something? Is it a kind of withdrawing, not bothered, not interested, rather disconnect? You could say in any moment there's some push, pull, or withdrawal happening. That's fine, it's normal. But also, maybe something would change that. Again, invite you just to use your intuition, maybe breathing longer or shorter, maybe getting interested as if this is the last breath ever, or the first, or a particularly unique sound. Something else you see is helpful to do here, bringing that kindness, intention, or care more intensely or more gently, more widely. See if we can turn that dial just a little bit in the direction of freedom, of well-being. Non-dukkha. you wish, as we come into the last 5 minutes, notice again the energy. Is it high? Is it low? The push away, the pull towards, the withdrawal of interest and intimacy. You may also notice our confidence in ourselves, our confidence that we can make a difference, that it's worth trying something. All of these things are adjustable, pliable, malleable. If you wish, just try something and you'll see. It may be now it's a good time to sensitively change the posture. Something radical like changing to standing or reclining or returning to sitting. Or delicately moving a leg or arm. Sensitive to everything. Intimate and not intimidated. Not afraid of getting it wrong. inviting you to notice once again how you're doing, how the body, heart, mind is as we draw the meditation to a close. Feeling of what we've cultivated, supported. And you wish you can join with others to radiate these benefits of this time to all beings. May our practice of care and compassion reach those who dearly need it at this time. May none feel alone in despair. So, thank you for your practice. Really delightful to be able to step into a space of sanity and calm together here at the online Dharma Hall, but also to have meditation as one of our skills, one of our toolkits that we have this escape, and not an escape from life, but actually an escape to life. Probably we could say much of the time we live kind of one step away from our lived experience, planning in the future or ruminating in the past, but also just feels like just like one step away, and you can almost feel one of the ways we could talk about meditation is a coming to life, coming together to life, and also like the flowers and leaves that kind of grow up in spring, that kind of coming to life, coming closer to life, coming more alive. And yeah, really appreciate this space for offering that, and for you for showing up to support it. And many of you have, you know, really been a regular backbone of these sessions since they started, or certainly of late. The idea of the online Dharma Hall actually grew out of the beginning of lockdowns in, what was that, 2020. So it's great that we're still doing that. I guess it must be somewhere close to 4 years since the online Dharma Hall was inaugurated. Anyway, so this has been a great project in my eyes. You know, I was one of the people there at the beginning, and I was thinking as I was typing in online Dharma Hall, because I haven't saved the link into the search engine, you know, to get through to here. And I thought, I think I might have come up with that name, or, you know, contributed it in a discussion or something. And it's been a relatively unique search find, so I can keep finding the Gaia House page to get to this. And anyway, all of that means that somehow someone's been supporting this and keeping it going, supporting it through their presence and supporting it through offerings, financial offerings. And, you know, I'm really happy that that's happening. So yeah, we're once again free to keep coming. We're free to support Gaia House and those who come and share these teachings with Dana also. And, you know, something I really want to make clear is you're not expected, and no one from Gaia House is wanting anyone to try and pay back for what they've received. You know, we've put so much into this. What are you going to do for us? Is, I think, actually the antithesis of dana, right? The opposite of dana. It's actually clinging. You know, it's craving. It's demanding. It's not dana. Dana is actually, you have the opportunity, if you love this, to offer it to someone else. Yeah, pay it forwards, contribute for others to come into this. And as we just did at the end of the meditation, you know, all of this cultivation is for what? Oh yeah, so I can hoard up the good vibes in me. Yeah, it's so that we can offer it back. We can offer it onwards, rather. Yeah, offer it onwards. And if you're in a situation where, you know, you're not able to offer anything, you know, you really want you to feel comfortable with that. And I know it isn't a very comfortable place to feel, you know, that I'm just receiving, but you're not just receiving. You're never just receiving. We're all participants. You know, dana is about participation. And yeah, if you can give a little, or if you can give a lot, it's all good, it's all welcome. If you can't give anything at all, you're very, very welcome to be here. And that's another of the reasons why we offer things on dana, is so that they are accessible to everyone. Also, I'll put some links in the chat. I mentioned that I'm over in... I'm going over to Palestine quite a lot. So I've actually added at the bottom of those links, the normal links to the Gaia House website for the support page, the Dependent Origination website if you want to offer any financial support to me, or just check out my website. It's quite fun. I like it, at least I did when I wrote it. That was some years ago. I've also put in the link to sanghasaver.org, which is the organisation that I've been with today, that has been bringing people into Palestine over the last few days. And we've been doing these retreats connected with this situation and other situations. We organise meditation in action. But through there, on that homepage, it's a new homepage, I made it just a couple of weeks ago, we have a link there to support Palestine. You can support food parcels to go into the West Bank. The West Bank is suffering quite a lot at the moment. You may have heard about some of it. Not quite sure how it's doing in terms of the news. It's perhaps not the most newsworthy topic at the time, but a lot of violence, a lot of oppression, a lot of systematic oppression. And, so people are struggling, and if you want to send a food parcel over there, we're offering that possibility. And there aren't many possibilities that I know of where you can really directly help. So if that moves you, you could give dana in that way. If there are other causes of concern in your area that you want to support, that's another great way to use your dana, use your wisdom, use your compassion that we're cultivating. Yeah, it doesn't need to be a short loop, closed loop kind of thing. Back to Gaia House, back to the teacher that, you know, offered me something. It's like, offer it on. That's the spirit of these things. Yeah, participation in the world awakening. I think that's what we're here for. So, yeah, I mean, I'm maybe rambling a bit today, but hopefully that's all right. So I'm actually just back from Dear Istia, one of my places that the people at the village tell me is my home, that I should feel at home here, and I really do. They're incredibly hospitable people. So it's a small Palestinian village. Just came back from a day of solidarity with them. I would actually call it a day of sanity in a pretty insane situation, pretty weird world that we live in, with upside down ethics and all of that, but also just an expression of friendship and a As I said, I sat there in a circle this morning and shared, you know, what's your intention? What do you want to make from this day? And yeah, it was really just about care, really just to support others that they wouldn't feel despair. And you know, maybe just to take a moment, because it's relevant to what I want to share about, of, you know, the distress that we can feel when coming in contact with, you know, the pain of the world and what we might call the unnecessary dukkha of life, you know, the very thing that we practice to avoid making for others, try to heal the effect of in our own hearts and vow not to play into the vicious cycle of more and more, you know, dukkha, more and more distress, agitation, irritation. Because of course, you know, there's pain in life. You know, of course, it's reasonable to say there's no security, there's no panacea, there's no escape from vulnerability. But there's also suffering born of ignorance. And it's become really evident to me in this situation out here, but I kind of get the feeling it's spread in the world, is that there's enormous suffering born of ignorance, you know, in our communities, in our ways that our governments act, in the ways that our societies are constructed around capitalism and all of this. And we just see the enormous suffering born of ignorance, you know, really standing up truthfully to the Buddha's point, yeah, which is, you know, if you've got ignorance and ignorance is dominating, there's going to be suffering. It is suffering, and it's going to lead to further suffering. And I think that, you know, speaking of this area, I really see it, and it's painful to see in the rise of settler violence. You know, it's just not understanding where happiness comes from, you know, not understanding what this is going to do to you to act in this way. There's a real rise of that at the moment, and our friends in Palestine, I really think it's hard to imagine what it feels like for them to know there's no one who can protect them from this violence. Yeah, there's no police, security, anything that they have there. There's no likelihood that anyone who does persecute them, whether it's settlers or army or organized, disorganized violence, anyone's going to serve any justice for that. Yeah, there's not going to be any justice for that. And you know, being with people for whom oppression is their daily life. You know, the felt presence is part of a military strategy. I was held up by the army just yesterday evening. You know, surrounded by 20 very strong-looking men with enormous weapons, for just trying to be friends with Palestinians. Really getting the feeling it's not allowed. You know, it's not allowed. And if you're going to make friends with the oppressed, you'll be oppressed too. You know, roads are blocked. The army enters and controls that, arrests and interrogations. And now, horrifically, there's now remote-controlled occupation. There's drones flying around the sky telling people, get out of this area. Get off your land. You're not welcome here. We even heard that the army turns up now and does Zoom interrogations. Yeah, so the soldiers come into the house, sit down in front of a computer and interrogate people remotely. So presumably so they can do more interrogations an hour. So kind of just setting that scene, because I sat with a farmer today, and he said to me, I won't let myself despair. Yeah. And really struck me as an interesting statement. But he'd said that to us before. You know, he was going out, you know, escaping from the curfew of his village to go and harvest mushrooms in the winter season. You know, just to keep on, I go to the field, I build, I plant, I harvest, I create, discover, learn. And yeah, he gets turned back and there's a disappointment there. But it kind of feels like the disappointment is nothing compared to the despondency, you know, of giving up. That sense of the possibility that there is something we can do, yeah, like we were just exploring in the meditation. Possibility of possibilities. Yeah. But okay, I don't know what to do, but I know there's something I could do that's going to make a difference, that's going to turn the dial. Yeah. And refusing to stay at home, refusing to do what I'm already doing. Yeah. There's always something we can do. Now, the idea that, you know, therefore we should be hopeful, I think, you know, perhaps an exaggerated conclusion, yeah. But, you know, don't have to get hopeful. And I like how my friend Abid, he said it, you know, I won't let myself despair. And you may recognize this, you know, it's like, you could say, I must maintain hope, right? But that's not quite the same thing. Now, the Buddha also often teaches by the negative. You may know this phrase. We've shared it through Guy House many times. You know, hatred is not stilled by hatred. Yeah, by non-hatred is hatred stilled. Yeah, this is what it says. It doesn't say hatred is not stilled by hatred. By love alone is hatred stilled. Now, some people use that as a quote. It's great. It sounds beautiful, you know. But actually, the saying is non-hatred. And so Abed's goal is not, I will remain hopeful of a better future. It's like, no, I don't need to. But I'm not going to let myself despair. Yeah, if we see hope and despair as ends of a pole. That's how I'm meaning them today. Yeah. It's actually not so much we have to do. It's not like we have to love everybody. But just try not to hate anybody. Yeah. I don't have to love my racist neighbor. Yeah. I don't have to. But what is actually the good of hating them? Yeah. What is it? Probably none. Yeah. Or very little. Right. And you know, the thing about my friend here, Abed, who really inspires me, is that he's doing it. He's not in despair. He doesn't talk about despair. He laughs, he jokes, he's incredibly funny. I mean, he's actually very mischievous. He's much older than me, but he's much fitter than me. He's much happier than me. He's much more skilled at everything than me, yeah. He knows what all the plants are. He knows how to build walls. He knows how to look after his family. He knows how to live. And there, I have so many Palestinian friends who are just so resilient. Yeah. And you know, I don't want to make like some kind of false comparison between Palestinians and Israelis. I spend a lot of time in both cultures. I was going to say too much time in both cultures. I don't know, but like overall, I just get this sense there's just an incredible resilience and lightness in the Palestinians, despite I don't know what, or just, you know, regardless, it's just how it feels. And with the Israelis, I know it doesn't feel like there's that same resilience. It doesn't feel there's that same lightness. And I feel my empathetic feeling is like, yeah, it's really hard. It's really hard to be oppressed. It's really hard to be under threat of violence. But when we feel for ourselves what it's like, if we feel like our governments, our powers are oppressing, yeah, and they are, yeah, they are doing that. It's a horrible feeling. It's a horrible feeling. What it does to the heart, the shame, you know, the blame, the despair. And this might seem strange, but like I feel part of my role is actually to try and help Israelis not feel a sense of responsibility what their right-wing government is doing, yeah, responsibility for that. And I do that because I think we have to respond to what they're doing. Yeah, we have to respond to the situation that we have. Taking responsibility for what other people do with their, you know, ignorance, basically, as we said. I don't see a lot of coming to good from that. I think that leads to a lot of shame and blame and heaviness. And we need lightness, we need the resilience, we need, like Abed, not to despair. Yeah, to believe there is something possible we can do. Because if we feel that we're doing that harm, then we will despair, and worse. One of the people who was with me in the field today is a very experienced practitioner, and she spoke about what I call a counter-evolutionary move. Yeah, like Abed's, I'm not going to despair just because everything is falling apart. that would be obvious. You know, that would be human natural, but that's not Abed. Yeah. And you know what she spoke about was actually proceeding when all isn't as we planned. You know, she was just saying, you know, so I felt like coming today, but then, you know, whatever it is, the car won't start, I didn't sleep very well, my alarm went off late, whatever. It's like, oh well, I won't come then. It's not perfect, I won't come. Yeah, it's not how I imagined it. But of course, you know, we can go, okay, it's not how I imagined it. I'm still going to do it. I'm still going to pursue. I'm still going to proceed. I'm still going to investigate. I'm still going to enact what it is that I want to see. And this kind of gets me to the main point, and I'll kind of close on this point that I wanted to say is, we're habitually reactive to things. Yeah, it's completely normal that we would be reactive, but we're not here to be normal and just say, oh well, that's normal. Yeah, habitually we often make things worse. I feel it in myself, you know. It's just, and our reactivity is, it's okay if we wish to survive, yeah, but not, it's not enough if we want to thrive. And that really comes down to the essence of it. And in reality, nowadays, yeah, for us, as an intelligent organism, survival isn't the goal, right? It just isn't the goal. It doesn't have a point to it. It you know, survival could just lead to a meaningless life. You know, meaning comes from meaningfulness. And the idea of what I'm talking about today really kind of just came as I was like listening to the despair and the hopelessness of Israeli friends, meditators, people who we want to come with us on our events, get more engaged in the demonstrations that my partner and partner's mother are at the moment with. You know, it's getting stronger and it needs to get stronger. You know, we need people to get engaged with these, but like the algorithm of the human algorithm that processes pain and hurt leads to reactivity and doesn't lend itself to resolution and healing. Yeah. And the kind of three or four normal ways, anger when things aren't how we want them to be, when our government isn't who we wish them to be, despair and hopelessness, yeah, is another way. Yeah, it's like, oh God, you know, fear and worry, the danger, the feeling, the overwhelm. Yeah, and how we shut down in the face of those. And of course, you know, anger without intelligence leads to, you know, a lack of skill or a lack of coming into being in ways which are wholesome and healing. Yeah, anger with intelligence can actually be a creative force. Yeah, but if we're doing things and then we're building more shame and regret, which, you know, can be misdirected at oneself or others, as if, you know, they're the owners of those actions, the essence rather than the activity point, if you know that one, you know, builds further anger, doesn't it? Yeah. So angry with myself now for getting angry with the other, or, you know, why they made me like this, and, you know, and then that blinds the intelligence, which is actually the necessary ingredient that we need to use in combination with that. And obviously, you know, as Abid was pointing out so clearly, you know, the despair and hopelessness, yeah, encourage inaction. It's like, well, there's nothing to do, right? And that inaction leads to stagnation and rumination. That builds more despair, right? So these kind of reactivity cycles go on in those ways, yeah. Those of us who are more the anxious type, the fear and the worry, you know, leads to this kind of emotional shutting down, this narrowness of possibilities, and that contracted state feels actually even more vulnerable, more endangered, which leads to more fear, more worry, and, you know, so it doesn't take a genius to kind of see these, oh yeah, these are patterns that we get into, the reactivity patterns that close us down. You know, the overwhelm we'll feel, that when we hear about a terrible thing happening or a danger happening. You certainly see this, you know, with in the Israeli community, you know, the recent things in October, more recent things with Iran, and, you know, it's like people just went on a news binge, stayed up all night just watching the news, reruns of information of these kind of bombs falling like fireworks, and it's like, and what does that actually do? What does that actually do to your psyche? Completely disbalances you from a sense of proportion. You know, it actually amplifies danger, and you say, oh, I got really overwhelmed. I feel really overwhelmed. It's like, yes, you are overwhelmed. You're overloaded. Yeah. Too much news is too much. Yeah. And if it's too much news and not enough response, right, we're actually much more consumers than we are creators. Yeah, in the modern world, yeah, it's like there's so much to consume. You actually kind of almost feel a duty to consume it. It's like, oh, they've made another thing. It's like 24-hour news. I should probably watch it for at least 20 hours or whatever. You know, it's like we need to be at least discerning curators of our news feed. Yeah, it's like choose to watch the news and then watch it. Now, I don't think, you know, completely disconnecting is the goal. But certainly not being completely absorbed in it can't be the goal either, right? But the second point I think is really important is if you hear news about something terrible, now go and search online for who's doing something about that and how can I support them? Yeah, how can I be with them? How can I join them? And if there really is nothing, and there won't be nothing, but if there really is, then start something. Start a campaign, start a petition, start a movement, you know, for that thing, because it's so important that we don't despair. So important, because there's going to be somebody who's organized a day out in Palestine or whatever it is, and you didn't go, you know, and you must go, you have to go, and you have to go because there's inspiring people to meet out there, and they need us, yeah, and they don't need us getting more overwhelmed with information that we already know. They don't need us tired or sleepless. They don't need us also restless and agitated and angry and fired up and looking for someone else to, you know, treat in an unwholesome way. So really, it's only positive action and collective engagement that can turn that dial. Again, call that a counter-evolutionary move. Yeah, it's that we come together to do something that inspires us, expansion, that courage was mentioned in the intentions, and just enough hope to actually go and do something, yeah? Just enough confidence. And what we were exploring in the meditation, you know, is that the energy is too much, too little. And it's like, we can start to adjust that, yeah? Sometimes there's that push, that pull, that withdrawal from existence, and we can adjust that. Yeah. Sometimes there's that lack of confidence that we can. Lack of confidence, conviction that things can be changed. Yeah. And those things together make up the hindrances, which are the core thing that we want to check. They're going to be there. Greed and aversion, the push, pull, withdrawal from existence, yeah. Restlessness and sloth are going to be there in our experience. And a lack of confidence makes up that fifth hindrance there. Yeah. So, yeah, we should be doing things, if we can, to do something often makes a big difference. Yeah. And moves us in the right direction. And, you know, very much like we just began the whole session with, that intention becomes like that Mary Oliver poem, you know, tell me, what is it you plan to do with your one wild and precious life? And those questions really matter. Like, what is it we feel called to do? What do you wish to have more of? And what are you willing to do? And where are you willing to go? How are you willing to be to be able to make that possible? And I think that's, for me, that's the Dharma in a nutshell. Yeah. Things are possible. Yeah, this whatever we're in is not inevitable. And your heart knows it. Your values call for it. Call for freedom for all beings. Freedom for this being. Oh, there we go. We reached the amount of time we gave for this. You know, I really hope that this sharing is helpful and not overly despairing, but, you know, the ultimate point is, if you feel a sense of despair, then follow Abed's advice and refuse it. Don't let it in. But I think that the way not to let it in, the idea that I was thinking about there is, you know, don't just sit there, do something, yeah, try something, act in some way, demonstrate, protest, write a letter, share with friends, get together in community and work on that. But equally, as a meditator, yeah, don't just say, oh, well, I've got a lot of hindrances today. Hopefully they won't be there tomorrow. It's like, just, you don't have to zap them. Don't fight them. That's also a hindrance, right? That's just a pushing away of the hindrance reality. But if you think that the way that you're breathing, the way you're holding your body, the energy of what you're bringing into this moment is independent of that, I think you're mistaken. And that's not what the Buddha taught. The Buddha taught dependent origination of experience. And what that means is there's a dependent fading of experience. Yeah. And that's the teachings that hold true across introspection and demonstration of our existence and our possibilities to be free inwardly and outwardly. And we mustn't stop until everyone is free. So, yeah, that's what I wanted to share with you this evening, or afternoon, or morning, depending where you are. And thank you again for being here, and look after yourself well, and look forward to seeing you again. All right, take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.